From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
On this episode, we're going to spend the entire show discussing the state of local journalism. Fewer news outlets, fewer reporters, and more misinformation. Just how bad have things gotten, and what are some possible solutions? We're going to talk about that and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, Professor Emeritus and former Director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime State House reporter and observer. And our guests this week, we have two of them. We have Tim Franklin, Senior Associate Dean and Director of Medill's Local News Initiative. And also we have Molly Parker, an investigative reporter for Capital News Illinois, and also an assistant professor of journalism at Southern Illinois University, and a distinguished fellow with ProPublica's Local Reporting Network. Tim and Molly, thanks for being here with us.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you.
So Tim, let me start with you. You've done a lot of research on this topic, so let me just ask that question. When it comes to the state of local journalism, how would you describe it right now?
You know, Sean, we're seeing just seismic historic changes in how news is consumed and how it's produced, how it's distributed, and how it's paid for. And we're seeing the collapse of the business model for local news. And we have been now for several years. There are now 203 entire counties in the U.S. with no source of local news, no newspaper, no digital site, no ethnic media, no public radio. And about 1,558 counties across the U.S. are down to one local news source. So when you add those up, more than half of the counties in the U.S. either have no local news or very limited access to local news. And unfortunately, Illinois has been one of the hardest hit states in the nation when it comes to loss of local journalists. Illinois has lost 85%. I'm going to repeat that. 85% of all of its newspaper journalists since 2005. That's the highest percentage in the nation. And the state has also lost 232 newspapers over that same period of time, which puts the state in the top 10 of all losses around the country. There are four Illinois counties that are news deserts. There are four additional counties that are on the Medill watch list of being at high risk of becoming news deserts. And there are a total of 33 Illinois counties that now have one local news source. So you put all that together, and it's a fairly troubling picture about the loss of local news, which I think has profound implications for communities, for consumers, and ultimately for our democracy. I do think there's some reason for optimism. So I want to say that and get that in. But we're at an inflection point when it comes to local news around the country and in Illinois.
You mentioned Illinois. It seems like Illinois is almost leading the nation when it comes to this seismic shift in local journalism. Do we have any idea why Illinois, I mean, compared to other states?
Yeah, you know, there have been a lot of newspapers that have been shut down, especially in suburban Chicago. About half of all the losses have been in the suburbs of Chicago. And when it comes to lost newspaper jobs, a lot of it has to do with the fact that Illinois has a whole bunch of news outlets that are owned by chains. And several of those chains are either owned by or kind of controlled by private equity or hedge funds. And those chains have really been hollowing out newspapers across the country. And the result of that is a phenomenon that we call ghost newspapers. So there are a number of newspapers across the country that now kind of exist in name only. There's very little to no original local reporting that are happening in those publications. They're basically a vessel for local advertising. So the combination of this private equity chain ownership, along with just some of the secular decline that's been happening in the industry, has really resulted in Illinois being, you know, one of the most affected states in the country.
Now, Molly, you're in Southern Illinois near the Carbondale area. You used to work for the Southern Illinois newspaper, which covered that region. I forgot it was a couple of dozen counties or more. What are you seeing in that region? Changes in the newspaper industry, changes in media in general?
Well, I certainly think if we look at that map that Northwestern put together, which is very helpful, that a lot of those counties and watch list counties are in our area. Tim can correct me if I'm wrong, but they certainly many of them concentrated downstate in our area. And I also worked for the Southern Illinoisan for years, and we used to cover a much, even though maybe not every county had a paper or a real active paper, you had these regional outlets in different parts of the state, including down in Carbondale, that would cover. We had teams of people who would be assigned to different counties and communities far outside of Carbondale. But really, over the last 5 to 10 years, that has stopped, where the regional newspapers are no longer regional. They are really just focused on one or two counties where the most people live. So you have these far-flung counties like Alexander County, Caro area that we've been focused on with our students that really just don't have anybody routinely covering them. And even while the big projects that we're trying to do in places like that are great, what you don't have is anybody covering the day-to-day city council. What's going on with my property taxes? Are they going to fix the roads and the potholes? Frankly, the things that we hear that people really, really would like a lot of attention on, maybe the more mundane day-to-day things that reporters do and bring attention to, really just, don't get covered. I would say there are a lot of places in Southern Illinois that have absolutely no one watching at all at any city council meetings, school board meetings. Even big institutions like SIU may only have reporters there occasionally now, which is almost unheard of even from 10 years ago, where you would have a teams of people, the AP, multiple news reporters, student newspapers. Now you might have you might be lucky to have one or two people show up to provide coverage of these meetings where these are big governments, not just small towns, but some pretty big areas that are just completely uncovered.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I can point out, having worked at both the State House but also covered local news for many years, that I also almost felt a little more important when I would go to some small town, some village board meeting, and I was the only reporter there. Charlie, you have more experience than any of us here on this panel. You have seen some real changes in the news industry.
Well, I'll give you an anecdote to start. I went and got a haircut the other day, and there were a lot of people in the barber shop, and I still go to a barber shop as opposed to a salon. And so I walk in with my newspaper and I sit down and I'm waiting, and I look all around. There's people with their phones out and they're scrolling on their phone. And it occurred to me that's one of the big problems. People are more reliant on social media than they are on what you would call traditional journalism. No offense to people who rely on Facebook, or I guess what's the latest one, Instagram. But I think there's a lot of stuff on there that is just somebody's opinion. And because of the way the algorithms are designed, as an example, if I like something that is to the left or to the right, the algorithm will continue to feed me stuff to conservative point of view, liberal point of view. And so you have sort of these information silos. And as the local newspapers have disappeared or have really reduced the number of people, and as Tim said, it's with this venture capital. I mean, the Tribune today, no offense, I get it every day. I'm a subscriber and I get the print edition because I'm old. But Colonel McCormick would be turning in his grave if he saw what was going on. And I remember this was maybe 20 years ago, there was some of the newspapers that were owned by entities that cared about shareholders more than readers were laying people off. And I talked to the guy who was the managing editor of the local paper here in town. And at that time, it was owned by Copley News. But anyway, he said, well, the Copleys, they're not really worried. They'll settle for, he said, like 4 or 5% return. They don't need 20% return. They're not going to lay anybody off. We've been assured. And I think that kind of attitude doesn't persist anymore because there are not that many newspapers that are actually owned by somebody in the town who sees it not as another way to make money, as opposed to investing in, I don't know, in Southern Illinois, investing in a coal mine or something. They see it as a civic obligation, if you will, more so than a way to figure out how can I milk this for all the dollars I can.
Well, Tim, it's certainly not the public's fault that they have phones and they have social media. They want to be able to access news, at the touch of a button on their phone. Has there been mistakes along the way? They're not meeting people where they are?
Oh, for sure. There have been a lot of mistakes, I think, that have led us to this point. I think the initial decision back in the 1990s not to charge folks for access to news content online was a mistake. You know, we conditioned people as an industry not to pay for local news and almost devalued the work. You know, I think that was a problem. And I think news organizations have not paid as much attention as they should over the years to the interests of their readers, which have in some cases led them to appear out of touch. You know, I want to follow up on some very good points Molly made. You know, people have said to me, well, Franklin, why do we care if a local newspaper goes out of business? You know, businesses go under all the time. Big box retailers have shut down and laid people off. Why are newspapers any different? And, you know, I would just say that there are really tangible effects of a loss of a newspaper. And I don't want to minimize the loss of jobs in other industries, but there's now research that shows that in news desert or low information communities, that government spending goes up, that government borrowing costs go up, and importantly, that civic participation declines, that turnout in local elections goes down, the number of candidates seeking local office, school board, city council, whatever the case might be, the number of candidates running for office goes down. There was even one study that showed that in news desert areas that corruption rises. So there are really tangible effects to this crisis on communities that go beyond kind of the really unfortunate loss of jobs that are happening in the industry itself.
We're talking about the state of local journalism. We have Charlie Wheeler. Also, we have Tim Franklin and Molly Parker here on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford. Molly, let's not forget mistrust of the media, because that's a big thing as well. I'm sure you've run into that in many cases going out and covering different stories.
Yeah, and I think that the decline of news makes that stronger, because people don't routinely see you where it used to be. You're the friendly neighborhood reporter who certainly holds people accountable, but also is there to celebrate the good and the bad. I mean, that's what community news is, right? So I, you know, in this role as an investigative reporter, that's different. We're looking for accountability stories. But when you're a community reporter, as most people start out as, you know, you're really there not just to look for the bad, right? Like, you're there to be part of the community, to be a watchdog, but also celebrate organizations and different things that your, you know, communities are doing, people who are making a difference, all those things. That was the fabric of news. People love the features as much as the city council meeting. And I think when a lot of that goes away, I know that we would experience that a lot in Alexander County and Caro, and completely fair. They would feel like we just show up when there's a bad situation, so it makes us look bad. And so I think that when you lose that daily beat reporting, where you can present a balance about people and communities and places, that it begins to look like, oh, well, this is just all bad here. And then people become distrustful. Now, that's at a, like a real honest level. Then you also have all these new factors, you know, with politics and politicians saying we're fake news. And the more, I think that, again, you have these news deserts where the information they're getting is sporadic and partisan, and in these pink slime papers, that makes it even harder for people to sort through, well, who are you and what is your role? All I know is on Fox News, they told me you're fake. And all of this is allowed to happen because of the news, like in part because of the news deserts, both on both sides, like people being frustrated that you're not covering them holistically, and then people being able to, or, you know, not understanding your role, how you go about your job, and calling you fake news and dismissing what you do, even though it is fact-based and you have all the receipts.
Yeah, and Molly touched on something there, Charlie, and I'm just going to go ahead and mention this from another news source called NewsGuard. This tracks misinformation and reported recently a number of partisan-backed outlets designed to look like impartial news outlets had officially surpassed the number of real local daily newspapers in the U.S. So we've got these fake papers, we've got real papers. You know, what's your concern about that?
I think the real concern is that, for want of a better term, it's bad for our system of government when there aren't trustworthy news organizations telling citizens what the issues are, what their elected officials are up to, and instead you have these pseudo newspapers that are disguised to look like a newspaper and are totally one-sided. I've read some of them, And it's interesting. It'll be a story about Charlie Wheeler says X, Y, and Z. And he says that Tim Franklin is a bum. And there's no response from Tim Franklin. And it's all slanted. It's one-sided. The ones that I'm familiar with, and Tim, you can correct me if I'm wrong, a lot of them are funded by very wealthy individuals who are trying to push particular candidates or particular public policy positions.
Yeah, no, Charlie, you're exactly right about that. You know, so there are now more than 1,200 of these so-called pink slime local, I don't want to call them news, but local outlets across the country. And most of them are run by right-wing PACs or donors. They do exist on the left. We should point that out. And so this is not exclusively an issue of right-wing publications. But Sean, I think the larger issue here is that I fear that we are headed toward a dumpster fire with disinformation in the fall. And you have kind of this toxic stew that is now brewing. So you've got hyper-partisanship in the U.S. We're all painfully aware of that. Then you have expanding and growing news deserts and loss of legitimate local reporters. Then you have the growth of these sites spreading misinformation and disinformation. And then you have the rapid adoption of AI, which makes it easy to distribute this stuff out in the public. And then, as Charlie pointed out earlier, increasingly people are getting news and information on social media. And when you go into your feed on social media, you know, it's a magic mixer of stuff. You don't, it's often hard to tell where information is coming from or who the sources are for that information. We really have this collision with all of these ingredients coming for this fall that I fear are just going to lead to a tsunami of disinformation.
I do want to point out it's not just newspapers, of course, radio, TV stations have disinvested in local news coverage. Well, even public radio in many cases, there's been loss of university funding, including the station I work for. But I do want to go to some of the success stories that are out there, and it includes a lot of these nonprofit sites. One of those, Charlie, you helped get underway, and Molly works for now, Capital News Illinois. Give us a quick overview of how that came about.
I'm on the Illinois Press Foundation Board of Directors, and I've been on it for 20 years. And the foundation is the educational arm of the state's newspaper industry. And I got interested in what was happening in the State House press room when the numbers were declining very, very dramatically. And what motivated me to do that was I was, as director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program, one of the things we do is place students in internships in the State House press room. Well, the number of internships was going down because the bureaus were closing. The drop was dramatic. And not to pick on the Trib, but one time Trib had two full-time reporters and somebody who came down on session days. Now there's one person who is more or less full-time in the State House Bureau. Sun-Times had two full-time reporters and people who would come down on session days. Now they have nobody there full-time, and they have a reporter who comes down on session days, like 10 years ago. And so we discussed it, and we thought about different ways of approaching it. And finally, we came upon a notion, seeing if we could, we being the Press Foundation, set up a State House Bureau and distribute content to initially to newspapers who were members of the association. And it has grown. We hired a broadcast director, and we now send things out to broadcast outlets. And we make it available free of charge to any media outlet in the state. And our funding comes primarily from the McCormick Foundation with help from the Press Foundation, the Illinois Broadcasters Foundation, and the Southern Illinois Editorial Association. So this is an example in my mind of something where the industry saw a problem with the loss of the local reporting and the loss of State House coverage for many areas in the state, and so took it upon itself to come up with a solution.
And there are some other nonprofit outlets doing pretty good work as well, and also seeing some success from that. This year in the Illinois legislature, a measure passed that would do a few things, establishing the Journalism Student Scholarship Program to help support students who are pursuing careers in Illinois journalism. It would also create a tax credit for certain news publishers based on the number of reporters that they employ, and it would require local news organizations to notify the state and employees well before a sale occurs. That would give other businesses and nonprofits a chance to step in and maybe make a purchase of that news organization. Part of this is to try to help prop up, in some cases, bring back local journalism. It's also maybe a way to get more young people into the field. And Molly, now that you're doing a lot more work with SIU, are you seeing kids coming in excited about journalism? Do they see it as a career?
Absolutely. We have lots of great students coming in. I will say, I think the pandemic had an effect on students where we're having to maybe relearn how to go out and interview people in person. It's a little bit generational too. And I've talked to other places. I think this is across the board where both through the pandemic and then through just cell phone culture, like getting young people out into the field, understanding what real reporting is about, bootstrap reporting, where you're actually out, not just, you know, texting somebody and putting their comment in. But I have seen that begin to change. And we have, again, just people who are really interested in the news. I try to get students interested in government reporting specifically. And sometimes they'll say, I don't want to do that. I don't want anything to do with government elections. I want to do sports or features or fun things. Again, I think some of that's for what they've been through. But when I say, well, tell me a little bit more about what you want to do. And they're like, well, I want to write about, they might say their schools, you know, I want to write about this high schools, or I want to write about what's going on at our universities, why some students are coming in and not graduating. I said, well, that is government. You know, so some of it is actually just reframing and seeing government through a different lens, that they want to write about things that are affecting their generation. So I do think that we have good students. I think that, you know, they want to do journalism and that they are still hopeful to come out and have places that they can do that work.
Well, we won't solve this problem on this show today, but there are some possible reasons for optimism. And Tim, we'll start with you. Where do you see local journalism headed, and are you optimistic?
You know, I'm actually more optimistic now than I was even a few years ago, in part because there's more visibility about this problem and more people are getting involved. So late last year, the MacArthur Foundation, based in Chicago, along with a consortium of dozens of other foundations across the U.S., announced a campaign called Press Forward, which is going to invest more than $500 million into local news over the next 5 years. And I think that that's funding that could provide at least a bridge to help news organizations create a digital future for themselves. So and that's money that didn't exist until recently. So I think that's significant, both practically and symbolically, for the future of local news. As we've talked about, there are now, I believe, 14 states that have either passed legislation or are considering legislation to help local news. So we're beginning to see movement on the public policy front as people understand the depth of this crisis. But I also see more and more innovation happening in local news. The Chicago area has become kind of an incubator of innovation for local news. Block Club Chicago, which is a hyper-local digital-only site in Chicago, I think one of the most successful digital local startups in the nation in the last 5 or 6 years, has built a solid financial situation with a diversified revenue stream, and they're doing some terrific work. There also are more specialized niche sites, whether it's investigative reporting or sites that are focused on underrepresented communities in Illinois, that are doing some really terrific work. And, you know, we're also seeing in Chicago, Chicago Public Media, WBEZ acquired the Chicago Sun-Times. That, I think, is one of the most interesting and important experiments in the country of converting a legacy daily newspaper into a not-for-profit and then folding it into a public radio organization. But you kind of put all those things together, and there are some things happening that I think do provide a reason for optimism.
And Charlie, your thoughts?
Well, I agree with Tim with what Block Club Chicago has done. They've won awards for the kind of coverage they give. Part of it is, if you work for Block Club, when I was at the Sun-Times, you know, the Chicago reporters would cover the city and the suburbs, and in my case, state government. If you're in Block Club, you'll cover maybe two or three neighborhoods, and you cover them intensely, and you get to know who the community leaders are, you get to know who the folks living there are, and you're really able to tell them what's going on that they need to know about local government, but also present to a broader audience, here's what's happening in my particular neighborhood. And a couple of things that I think are interesting. Another thing that Capital News has done is it's signed up for a program and it's made it available to its members and others. It's called Earn Your Press Pass. And basically it's an online education program intended to help small newspapers train community members to become journalists. And I think there are more than a dozen local newspapers and a couple of schools have signed up for it. And in my mind, that's a way that a concerned citizen can get the kind of training that would enable them to maybe even start up a local alternative nonprofit organization. I'll mention one other thing, too. I think the universities, particularly Southern and Molly and her students did an outstanding look at what's happening in Carroll, Illinois, the promises that have been made over the years for Carroll and how they've been routinely ignored. And then at DePaul University, the Center for Journalism Integrity and Excellence, which is headed by Carol Marine, who is a longtime Chicago news reporter, and Don Mosley, they have produced stories that have run in Chicago media. So maybe there's a way in some of these areas for local journalism programs to move in and provide content. And you don't need to have a printing press. You could do it online pretty easily. That would help, if you will, bring a little irrigation to some of these news deserts.
And Molly.
Yeah, just building off what Charlie said, I think, again, if you look at Northwestern's map that Tim Franklin and his folks have put together, it was very helpful. You'll see that many of those news deserts are downstate. But one of the positive things is that many of them are located around the universities, particularly the directional universities that tend to be located in some of the most disadvantaged parts of our state. So I was a little surprised it didn't come out of this session with the great things that were done for journalism and the bill that's pending. But I do think going forward that universities are going to have to be a bigger part of the discussion around how to provide coverage that is complementary and not in competition with our legacy media, that we want to still support them, but to be able to offer something else. And I mean, again, SIU started this Lukey Local Reporting Lab, just getting started with that, but it's given kids real, young adults, real life experience to publish at a professional level. I know Northwestern has had an investigative team, seen them publish with ProPublica even. So I think that there are ways to highlight local issues and elevate them to a statewide and national level, depending on the story, and that is going to have to be part of the solution to the news deserts, is including the universities and the young students so that they both get experience, but also just practically can help in the interim before they go on into wherever they're going and providing consistent news coverage in our areas.
Well, I want to thank all of you for listening and also to our guests for joining us for this special episode of State Week. We'll talk more about this in the future as well. Again, I want to thank Professor Emeritus Charlie Wheeler and Tim Franklin, Senior Associate Dean and Director of Medill's Local News Initiative, as well as Molly Parker, an investigative reporter for Capital News Illinois and Assistant Professor at SIU in Carbondale. Remember, you can find our show where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford, and join us next time.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.